Blog Talk Radio.
And once again, we say, the onslaught of the corporate juggernaut against the 99% is complete. And without further ado, to comment on this, we turn you over to Brother Ralph.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And on this day, we are still mourning the loss. I am still dealing with the loss of our sister Lynn, but we must soldier on. What I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. And to deal with the issues that we're dealing with today, the onslaught of the corporate juggernaut against the 99% is complete. What do I mean by that? What I mean is the danger in the issue of Supreme Court justices is that there are still many people of color and many oppressed progressive people who believe in the law. The law in America has now and has ever been a major instrument of oppression backed up by the gun, military force, army of occupation, police, etc. Major instrument of oppression of a people of color. As quoted by Lynn Stewart, direct quote, The law is whatever they say it is at any given time. Therefore, we must carefully examine the value of time and effort expended on the law rather than spending time and effort on counteracting the law with actions that are within our control. Economic action, spending, development, education action, control of schools in our oppressed communities, and the same manner of control of schools enjoyed in the white communities, economical, contextual, etc. And so we must deal with the realities of our time. And one of the things that has come to my attention, and I guess all of our attention, is when the analysts speak of why Trump won or the problems of the Democrats, race is never mentioned. What that means is that neither party is going to deal with racism in or out of the country. Therefore, we must deal with this problem while being hindered by institutions controlled by both parties. Therefore, we must deal with this problem while being hindered by institutions controlled by both parties. The words of politicians are beautiful and correct. Political party platforms can be correct. We must support those who support us in our issues, and we must turn out, reject, speak out against those who do not support our just positions. And as I was thinking today, Hitler requested at his suicide that Dönitz, his appointed successor, stick to the tenets of their racial laws and philosophy of Nazism. And I can only tell you that request was continued by racist America. That request was continued by racist America. And those of my age, 83, remember the shock and pain of the reality that German prisoners who were in the South, white German prisoners of war who were in America in the South, had more privilege than the black soldiers going to Europe to fight and die to overthrow Nazism. It never left my mind. And I could go on and on, but I'm going to switch over to Sister Betty to introduce the guests who are on to educate us further. Remember all of the things I have just said. There is more coming. There is more coming. And they are all true. And this day and age of computers, you can check it out. Sister Betty.
Just wanted to remind you that our theme tonight is the onslaught of the corporate juggernaut against the 99%. It's complete. There is no news except the fake news, Trump's personal taxes, Trump's family issues, Trump's personal ties to Putin, Trump's Supreme Court judges. There is no news relating to our reality, the reality of the 99%. Without further ado, I'd like to go to our poet in residence, Brother Nat Turner. Your mic is open.
Okay. This is another group that I think represents a different reality, and this is called Army of Artists. Baba boo-dee-da, da-da-dee-da-da, ba. Harmony of a hug, rhythm of a rose, melody in the mirror. We are an army of artists, merchants of life, beauties our bomb loves its shrapnel. We are an army of artists, infantry on feet of celebration, toes polishing hardwood floors with perspiration. We are an army of artists, brandishing sticks and brushes, softening up enemies with strokes and notes, partisans wielding pastels, oils, and acrylics, connecting dots, hitting spots on canvas and paper. We are an army of artists, foreign fighters, formerly known as dukes, counts, birds, and pops, militant magi weaving dreams in azure skies, etching prayers on mirrors with our acid tears. We are an army of artists, asymmetrical warriors, mopping up murals, gracing broken down buildings, enemy combatants crying clear lacquer on contrabasses, snipers shooting sunlight into hearts held hostage by the 1%. Antonia is our tonic for subdominant dreams. We are an army of artists, dangerously unselfish, enemies of ignorance, drumming to different dancers, staging attacks in theaters, exploding in applause.
Thank you for that, and I would like to remind people, the listeners, that art is a part of our hearts and souls. And in this struggle, I have a story that I'm going to take one moment to tell at a later date about the songs Nina Simone, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, and how we use that song to celebrate our victory in breaking the New York City management, the stranglehold that the Department of Education had on budget, on money, on positions within the school system. In 1965, you could not be a principal in New York City if you were of color. You could not be a stationary engineer, which took not a high school education, but a 10th grade education. But the economics of that was as important as the institution itself in terms of learning. We broke that. And when we stopped singing the Star Spangled Banner in the morning in the courtyard and started singing Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, from 135th Street and Lenox Avenue to 7th Avenue, people lined up to hear that beautiful music sung by the children and the words while it came over the loudspeaker. And at 9 o'clock, when the bell rang, hordes rushed to the bus, to the subways. People understand art, poetry, and appreciate it. We just have to have some victories to add to it. I'm going to turn it back to Sister Betty. Thank you for that, Nat Turner, our poet in residence, Betty.
Thank you.
Brother Tom, mic is open. And Brother Razakhan, we need you to hang in the wings. Brother Tom.
Greetings to everyone. Today we look back 49 years ago on April 4th, Martin Luther King Jr. was killed. And he was killed because he was developing and had developed a true interpretation of our history and what America was all about. Now, in the beginning, Martin Luther King Jr. Devoted his efforts to ending the racist segregation system. But then he went from civil rights to human rights and to our policies overseas. And he made that famous speech at Riverside Church in which he called the United States the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. Well, that kind of speech put him on a list where he was not going to be lasting too much longer. And then when he got to Memphis and he made that famous speech, the last speech he made, he knew at that time, because he had been warned, him and his staff had been repeatedly warned, that if Martin Luther King continued his journey from civil rights to exposing the imperialist policies of this country to economic rights and exposing capitalism, that if he continued on this journey and if he made any more speeches and if he didn't withdraw from his support of the sanitation workers' strike, that he would be assassinated. But he continued on, and I think the best speech he ever made was the speech he made in Memphis just before he was assassinated, in which he linked racism, imperialism, and capitalism. Those are the three realities of America. And until people wake up and face those realities, especially the working class, white and black, that this triple identity of the system in which we live is against their interest. Now, there's a lot of brainwashing that has gone on for many, many years to hide all of this and to convince working class people that their interest lies in the United States being an imperialist power, in the capitalist being able to run this economy, and some of that will trickle down to them, and that racism is something that is not a problem anymore. And until they realize that all of this is false, this country will not ever progress. The challenge of the progressive movement in this country is not to get rid of Trump. He is not the problem. That's what the Democrats want us to believe. Trump is merely a symptom of the real problem of the United States, and that is racism, imperialism, and capitalism. And until the majority of people realize that, and they face up to their own history and their own prejudices, then we will never get anywhere. Until we realize that this country was not founded as a democracy, never was a democracy, and is not now a democracy, we will be totally confused and we will be vulnerable to all these phony politicians, both Democrat and Republican. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Tom. And what we have to recognize, the reality of America that has been hidden by propaganda, that is movies, etc., is being revealed. That reality is being revealed. And people will react in a manner that will change this nation. We must react to reality that is being revealed. And Trump is very, what would you say, very important in this element, because he is continually making it clearer and clearer when he promises jobs that he cannot have, that he cannot provide, when he promises the increase in military spending and without taxes, because he's talking about reducing taxes, as he makes all of these false promises, as the country, as America sends soldiers, young men and women, out to fight the wars to make money for the wealthy, for the industrialists, and when they come home injured, they cannot even get medical care, they cannot get education, and what they do is they go to the people and say, wounded warriors, etc., to raise funds for the wounded warriors while the industrialists have a birthday party that costs $7 million, a total waste, a total gift to the wealthy, and totally ignore those who went to fight wars to make them rich, not to bring freedom or democracy to anybody. It is a total joke, and we don't have to go far to deal with this total joke. When we talk about democracy, all we have to do is look at the Democratic Party in New York that cut off people's ability to vote for Bernie Sanders in preparation or in support of Hillary Rodham Clinton, who lost the election to Donald Trump. We don't have to go far to see that America is not interested in democracy anywhere. But with that said, I'm turning it back to Sister Betty Davis.
Okay, Brother Razakhan, your mic is open. Brother Razakhan, who is a supporter of Mumia and all political prisoners, and who is a jailhouse lawyer himself, and periodically puts out community letters to wake our community up, to make them face reality. Brother Razakhan, can you give us a few words?
Thank you for having me on. I was listening to everybody, and I appreciate everything I hear. You know, just, a lot of times we say we're preaching to the choir, but it's just good to hear somebody talk some sense sometimes. You know what I mean? Looking at all the politicians and stuff like that, and if we remember, every politician that came in the office with that law and order nonsense went to jail. Just think about it. You know what I mean? Every one of them. And we just don't, if we could just start getting them to not do us no favors, speak the truth. If they say this is a law of nations and apply the law to everybody, Jeff Sessions has no business even doing anything. Even Donald Trump shouldn't even be able to pick no Supreme Court people and head Jeff Sessions head of the Justice Department with all that shadow corruption around him. I mean, why would they even allow that? And they talking about who tweeted who and all that kind of stuff. They should charge him right now and have him, I mean, stop all the voting on the cabinet and all that kind of stuff. He just don't belong. He don't. He's not the one to be there.
Speak into the mic, brother. Speak into the mic.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Yeah, you're breaking up. Speak into your phone.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well,
that's better.
That's much better.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, well, did you hear anything I said?
Yes, we heard it. It was just crackling a little bit. Continue.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because when we do get real, I mean, judges are more important than congressmen, state senators, anything. Because if they declare something unconstitutional, then everybody got to stop and take a look at that. You know what I'm saying? This is why they had to get Hastings, Judge Hastings, Alex Hastings from Florida off of the bench, because he was doing his job. You know what I mean? He didn't sugarcoat or try to make excuses for racism or bigotry. When he saw it, he attacked it, and they got him off the bench. We should always try to honor individuals like that. You know what I'm saying? But I hear very little about him nowadays. You know, although I keep up with him, his newsletters and stuff like that. But we got some heroes out there. But all this is going on now is just nonsense.
Well, thank you for that. And what we must do is take that, what you have spoken, and support those who support us. Now, it is very dangerous supporting those people who understand and interpret the law as truth. We think of our Reverend Pinckney out in Benton, Michigan, who talked about water usage 15 years ago when he accused Whirlpool of not paying their water bill to Benton Harbor, the municipality, and then the fiscal emergency manager took over Benton Harbor for not paying their bills, but Whirlpool, who was using their water system and not paying their bills, was not forced to pay. And when Reverend Pinckney made this real and recalled the lying politician, they put him in jail. And he is still in jail because we, the people, have not recognized what is real and what is imagined and what is lied about when we talk about the reality of America. But I could go on. And I'm going to turn the microphone back to Sister Betty.
Thank you, Brother Raza Khan. And we know we have Sister Ann in the house. And after her, we hope that Brother Joel will hang in there with us. Sister Ann.
Hey, good evening, everybody. This has been a very interesting conversation. Well, I have a couple of little updates to report from a part of the world, the prison industrial complex, et cetera, et cetera. I just got a very interesting email that's a report from the controller's office all about the aging prisoners in New York State. So it'll be very interesting to read. Jaleel sends regards to everybody. I saw him again on Sunday. He did finally get his property. We're happy to report. He got his precious photo albums and his Quran and his prayer rug and all the things that they had been holding back. And eventually appeared. It was quite good.
Can you give us some of his blog? I know he's got a blog going.
I wanted to read you his latest thing, actually. I'm going there now. Just be patient for a moment. I had it in front of me, but then I got distracted by something else. His latest blog is very interesting. It's called Cognitive Dissonance, and he was talking about this. And I said, a lot of us have having a lot of that going around lately. this is one he just wrote. He wrote it in the middle of March, but he just sent it to me this week. Since being held in both Attica and Southport special housing units, SHUs, for the past several months, from December 5th, 2016 to March 21st, 2017, Each week, a psychologist stops at each cell, asking its inhabitant, "How are you doing? Are you feeling all right?" When the prisoner responds, "I'm okay," the psychologist moves on to the next cell. I have witnessed and experienced this weekly ritual and responded with the customary, "I'm okay," and contemplated on the routine of it all. This form of crisis management, if there were to be a crisis, attempts to discover predictors before a crisis manifests and lends thought to the origin of the need for such management. How should I delineate the origins of this man-made created dilemma? Perhaps as far back as the advent of the 13th Amendment in 1865, ending private holding of slaves, appropriating and inventing its quote-unquote lawful practice by the state, when slavery and involuntary servitude were codified into law for those duly convicted of a crime. Maybe it would be best to consider the slaves in the cotton fields and a psychologist one day each week traversing the plantation asking each slave, "Is he or she all right? How are you feeling?" Right? Or even further back, as Africans are being piled in the bowels of slave ships, that would be the perfect place to pose this crisis management question. Indeed, for many, this thinking would seem ludicrous or cynical, knowing a need exists to address this man-made creative problem because there are prisoners who succumb to the mentally debilitating conditions of 23 to 24 hours locked in a prison cell, just as some African slaves during the Middle Passage jumped overboard to their watery demise, some 21st century slaves commit suicide in their cold, desolate cells. Nonetheless, the question to be contemplated is not the asking of the prisoner slave how he or she is doing or are they all right. Rather, the question needs to be asked of the persons, prison guards, administrators, society, who lock other human beings in cells 23 or 24 hours. Are they okay? Don't ask the enslaved, ask the enslaver. For it is the choice of one's humanity or lack thereof that cultivates, grants, and permits this kind of brutal, soul-snatching treatment that needs to be questioned. The laws and regulations that permit the caging of human beings need to undergo psychological evaluations to determine if they are humane in their totality. The social order and criminal laws demand the punishment of imprisonment at a greater socio-psychological and moral determinant than the obvious deterrent to criminality, i.e., redistribution of wealth to eliminate poverty, drug and alcohol addictions, unemployment, dilapidated schools, and homelessness. It is well established the problem of crime and punishment leading to imprisonment is not intractable. There are a plethora of studies that offer irrefutable cause and effect solutions. Yet, given the availability of these studies, the criminal injustice system continues to deliberately operate as big business, exploiting the human misery created by the collective failure to truly address Americans' historical and racial pathology. Such social and racial pathology has now become rooted and metastasized in the White House, consolidating and morphing into a dangerous enterprise of xenophobic empire building. But I digress from the principal issue under discussion. This writing was triggered on March 15, 2017, as I was meditatively pacing in this Shiwangong Shu cell for about an hour. It is one of my coping mechanisms after completing 350 push-ups and other exercises. A middle-aged, good-looking black woman appeared in front of the cell, announcing she is Mrs. Buchanan, a psychologist, asking me the expected questions. As I answered, "I'm okay, no, I'm not feeling suicidal," a smile crossed my face. She observed your smiling, nodded her head, and walked away. She did not ask what I was smiling about, whether I found her amusing, and I can only imagine what she conjured, but it's safe to say it wasn't of me being suicidal. If she only knew my thinking was, "Are you okay?" for even asking me that question. Are you part of the problem or part of the solution? What I've experienced in the last several months in SHU and endured for 45 years of imprisonment is symptomatic of a much larger societal problem as here contemplated and shared. Unfortunately, the majority of Americans suffers from an acute malady of cognitive dissonance to the severe detriment of the poor and oppressed, prisoners included. In the spirit of Nelson Mandela, in apartheid New York State prison system, Jaleel Muntakim, Shiwangong Shu, March 15, 2017. Remember, we are our own liberators.
Thank you so much, and thank
amazing,
you
right?
so
much. Thank Jaleel for that one. It's just amazing.
Jaleel, okay. And what I want to ask is, we must ask, are we all right? Have we been blinded and confused to the point of inaction? How long are we going to accept the reality of those who understand and fought against this corrupt, racist government going to allow them to keep our people, the righteous people, the just people, in confinement. And I must say, there is nothing on the horizon of the Democratic or Republican parties that deals with that. We must be, as you stated, our own liberators, and we must begin to separate ourselves from these unjust, hypocritical liars. This system, as Sister Betty mentioned in the beginning, this juggernaut, almost complete. We listen, and Martin Luther King was a good man and an honest man and a righteous man, but he did not understand history. How is it that we don't hear the voice of Adam Clayton Powell, who talked about dollars constantly? Where is the money? Where is your political party going to? That's why they got rid of him, and they used the people around him. And as Lynn Stewart said from prison, the big problem in this society and the world is greed and corruption. Mm-hmm. As we saw Charles Rangel, the representative from Harlem that the Democratic Party used, and Joe Overton as the Democratic Party used, and Reverend Butts as the Democratic Party used, to silence the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. But I'm going to turn it back to our Sister Betty Davis.
I want to say that Brother Joel is in the house and his mic is open, and we can't wait also because Tariq is coming after him. Brother Tariq is in. Go ahead,
yes,
Joel.
Tariq, can I be heard?
You're heard loud and clear.
Okay. Well, I was listening to what people were saying before, and you know, the power that the rulers of this country have, both of on top of the economic system, who are billionaires and own both industrial capital and banking capital, and also the political heap of their servants, the supposed powerful. They're called powerful, but actually the only power that they really have comes from our, meaning the regular people, the working class people, the poor and middle class, from our complicity, because every wheel that's in song, you know, without our brains and muscle, not a single wheel would turn.
It's true.
And it's the same thing is true in the workforce, the same thing is true in the armed forces. We do all the building, the construction, we do all the fighting, and yet this ruling class that has nothing but the profits that we have surrendered to them every day with our blood and sweat and tears, they keep getting a larger and larger share. The house always wins, as the saying goes. And now, in that context, we have a casino owner who's taken over the title of president in a situation where the house always wins.
You're right.
And somehow he presented himself as a man of the people. They call him a blue-collar billionaire. A blue-collar billionaire. But actually, it's amazing that everything could be turned on its head. And everyone that advocates revolution or even that advocates certain reforms that may not have the belief that revolution is even possible are called elites nowadays. But that's like an elite idea. And the role model presented for the working people is nothing but abject surrender and proud of it. Now, this is largely a fiction. Now, before it was, I know that when Trump took over, that there was a large outpouring of people onto the streets. Especially the women's movement was powerful, but it was led by the Democratic Party and people who are directly or indirectly in orbit around the Democratic Party. So issues were raised that it was called the resistance, but there was very little vision to the resistance. And very soon, I have a hope, and I'm sure a lot of other people have a hope, that these hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of people that have been on their duffs throughout the depredations of the Obama administration, that now at last they were back in the streets. And it was all packed in. You notice that the same issues are still there, but the people are not being called out into the streets because the Democratic Party leadership and others who are into protest to some degree but also have another foot that's benefiting from this horrible system of plunder and genocide and labor exploitation and all kinds of oppression. They are afraid that, yes, if those people keep out in the streets, that they will begin to feel how powerful they could be.
Exactly.
So now it's all been packed in, and the opposition has become a series of congressional investigations. And it's like back in the old days, there's a paranoia that somehow the Russians made some connections and that they were somehow behind the election of Trump and so on. But, you know, I remember even before Trump announced his candidacy, he was wall to wall on the media, especially on TV channels. Every TV announcer wanted to know how Donald Trump related to every issue, wall to wall. Now, that was not Putin, right? That was the American ruling class, the people who control the media in the United States. And to some degree, they may have even used Putin, used him because they put out this idea that even though the imperialist system wasn't being changed a bit, and in fact the rhetoric was more and more about unleashing it, that there would be a certain relaxation of tensions and peace with Putin, let's call it. But it's turning out to be an enormous illusion now. The troops that were being moved to the Russian border are being reinforced that during the Obama administration, are being reinforced now, not being pulled back. The open threats of war are being made against North Korea. The fighting is escalating inside Ukraine against the forces that have tried to remain independent of the coup makers sponsored by Western imperialism. So it doesn't, and also now in Syria, there is new barking in the media by all the authorities of various pretexts of getting more and more deeply involved in the Middle East. And Trump has proclaimed that the Israelis and the Zionists, as opposed to the Palestinians and the surrounding countries, that they've never had a better friend than Trump. And the Trump platform and administration is the first one in decades that has not included a two-state solution or any other promise of any form of statehood to the dispossessed and ethnically cleansed, suppressed Palestinian people. And there's also a lot of bellowing from the Trump forces about the treaty that was made with Iran. Not quite a treaty, so it can be walked away from. So all of these things portend a great deal of escalation of a new Cold War and maybe even a hot war breaking out on a world scale. Now the question is, why are the streets empty? Why hasn't protest broken out? We understood during the Obama administration, as during the Clinton administration to a lesser degree, the Democrats were in power, and so they didn't want to lead protests against wars by Democratic presidents. But supposedly, with Republicans in charge, okay, that they could protest. So why is it that they're not protesting? Why is it that people are not being led out into the streets? It's because the Democratic Party is afraid that a movement now with the politics of the ruling class so raw could break away from them and become a revolutionary movement, or at least in the more immediate sense, a serious reform movement that's headed towards revolution when the ability, the illusions of the ability to reform the capitalist system in a meaningful way become exhausted. And so now, while protesting loudly and expressing outrage against Trump, they're more impotent than ever. And it means that we needed new organization. But now it's apparent that nobody will even be out there walking around in a circle kind of protest unless that organization forms. The last illusions in the Democrats should now be exhausted. And that's what I think the job of people that are on this program and the listeners and friends, people that think like us, lies ahead of us. We have to think, how can we bring people out into the streets so that they can feel their power and feel that what we need again is a democratic republic, meaning democratic, a rule by the people. That is what that word means. The people that right now are dormant because of the control of the Democratic Republican partnership or tag team or duopoly, as it's variously been called, and the lack of an organization on our own part that has broken with those forces and can at least begin to lead a mass protest and build up the strength of the masses so that it can be expressed as a democracy. That is, it can come to power And this, don't want to get spread any confusion, because very often the word democracy by the media is equated with capitalism, meaning they equate the rule of the people to the rule of a handful of rich plutocrats, of billionaires, and today we're talking trillionaires. They call that a democracy. Anything else, they call totalitarianism, because it can shut down the abuses of the capitalist system, and that's a real democracy that expresses the power of the people. So that the only way today to build a democratic republic is not to have a handful of enslavers using capitalist methods of slavery to dominate us all. It means really that there has to be a revolution that breaks their grip on the politics of the country, so that the country doesn't revolve around the interests of a handful of corporations that's directly opposed to the interests of the people. And a democratic republic with strict limits on the power of property over the people. That is, strict limits on the power of dead labor, meaning everything that labor built, and everything that's operated by labor, all the machinery, to be dominated by the living labor, the working people. That's really what it's all about. And so
thank you for that.
That's really where we have to go. And I say the next step is build organizations that can have a tremendous outpouring onto the streets and demonstrate that the power resides in our hands. We have to organize it to exert it in the proper way.
Thank you, Joel. Thank you so much. Brother Tariq, you're in the house.
Brother Tariq is in the house. I'm going to be brief. I want to say, Ralph, thank you for imparting the information to us that you've been imparting to us. I want to say peace to Sister Betty Davis, peace to Ann Lamb, and peace to the other contributors and to the listeners. Thanks for having me. As you know, I am Tariq. I am a Black Panther. I am a former Black Liberation Army prisoner of war. Tonight, I just briefly want to talk about King. As you know, today is April 4th. Today is the day the man known as the Apostle of Peace, Martin Luther King, was killed. Martin Luther King, I love you, and millions of other people love you for having had the intelligence and the courage to struggle to bring down the walls of segregation and to attempt to bring an end to the discriminatory practices directed at Black people. Martin Luther King and the people living in Montgomery, Alabama, struggled and sacrificed to win the bus boycott battle. I find it to be very moving when I think about Black people in the face of every kind of threat, up to and including the threat of death, coming together to defeat the diehard segregationists. Additionally, King and the civil rights protesters also won the struggle to end segregation and public accommodation. As a child, I rode across the country with our food in the car, and my family and I stopped on the side of the road to use the bathroom. So, yes, I personally appreciate King and the civil rights winning the public accommodation battle. I also appreciate King and the civil rights inclining the Congress and the President to sign the Voting Rights Act. However, the public should know that even though King and the civil rights were nonviolent, there were violent entities that influenced the 1% ruling class to change their policies. China, 1949. Vietnam, 1954.
Algeria, 1960, Ghana, 1957, India, 1947, Cuba, 1959. The ruling class knew that one of the reasons the poor people around the world fought so hard is because they knew about the segregated situation black people in America was being kept in. The ruling class changed their segregationist policies so they could keep the flow of money coming to them. In conclusion, I know King and civil rights would have behaved differently had they known that the 1% was using the U.S. government apparatuses to carry out genocide against black people, free all of our political, all of our prisoners of war, and power to the peace. And Ralph, keep telling us, imparting to us the information that you do every time one of us speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
But thank you so much for that. And this is what I'm talking about to our listening audience. Information, information, information. And we know the king, American mythology of democracy, has no clothes. And as Trump exposes naked America, there will be a reaction of supporting or opposing positions that will create a crisis in America and the world. Richie, are you in the house?
Yes, how are you, Ralph? Happy birthday again.
Thank you, and thank you for that.
Absolutely. Many more happy birthdays, Ralph. And please remember, before the show's over, to announce the event you're doing on the 22nd, what time, for the audience that's listening before the show's over. I told Ralph I was going to call in and do a poem in memory of Lynn. As we all know, the people's lawyer, the warrior, Lynn, loved poetry, and I thought a short little poem by Allen Ginsberg would be appropriate. And it's a famous one he did, How. I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness, starving hysterically naked, and I would add, and now laying naked with poverty pimps, gouging them and pimping them. I'm just adding that for now. Dragging themselves through the Negro streets at dawn, looking for an angry fix. Angel-headed hipsters burning for the ancient heavenly concentration to the starry dynamo in the machinery of night. With poverty in tatters and hollow-eyed, and high set up, smoking in the supernatural darkness of cold water flats, floating across the tops of cities, contemplating jazz, who barred their brains to heaven under the L and saw Muhammad, angels staggering on tenement roofs, illuminating, who passed through universities with radiant cool eyes, hallucinating Arkansas and Blake-like tragedy. Among the scholars of war, last paragraph, were expelled from the academies for crazy and publishing obscene odes on the windows of the skull. And I just want to leave one quick thing before the show's over about Smedley Butler. He was a member of the country's most allegiant force, the Marine Corps. He was a major general, and he said, I spent most of my muscle man must be in a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. The best he could do was operate his racket in three districts, or operate on all three continents. Major General Smedley Butler, U.S. Marine Corps. And that's to Lynn and all the people. Don't forget to go to Ralph's event, the 22nd.
Thank you so much for that, Richie. A wonderful conclusion of our program, April 22nd, St. Peter's Church. That's at Lexington and 54th Street from 2 to 7 p.m., and we're going to put it out there. We have wonderful people coming to speak about Lynn and her dream of justice in America.
We hope you will join Glenn Ford, Ralph Shulman, and many, many others, including Donald Charles Barron, at this event. Many more are still confirming. We hope to see you there, April 22nd, Saturday, St. Peter's Church, from 2 to 7. Thank you. And we want to acknowledge that Brother Larry Pinkney sends you his regards. He is in a community meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Republic.
The whole round world to hear. I wish